This is Essays and IPAs, presented by CDI Studios.
Thank you, everybody, once again, for joining us for Essays and IPAs. I'm Michael Colonna, AVP of Data Center Solutions here at CDI. Joined today with two of my comrades that you've seen before in the other episodes, but we're joined by a new fellow you might have seen from other podcasts going on at CDI. But why don't we start with him?
Cool.
The outsider.
I'm Will Huber. I'm the CTO here at CDI. Been here for 7 years and happy to be on your show.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for joining.
Who shows better?
I mean, we have a pretty good background.
I think we know.
I mean, we drink ours, so. Yeah.
There's no alcohol.
We'll provide some more insight. I'm Kyle Mullen. I'm the VP of Solutions Architects at CDI.
And I'm Rob Owen, Chief Architect here at CDI.
Yeah. So thanks, everybody. So last time we kind of ended with the ideology of storytelling, right? And we kind of took that footnote also on failures. How do you move forward with failures? How do you handle failures? Things like that. So we're kind of going to start there. So let's start with storytelling. And, you know, really how we need, what we're saying there is, I'll set the stage. It's not about telling a story so that people believe something that's not true, right? It's not fairy tale telling. It's really about how do you put together the things that you're trying to portray in an easily consumable manner so that people can digest those things and actually absorb them. We talked about in blogs and other mediums, how do you really get those things, right? How do you get that and thumb through and get those nuggets? It's the same thing when you're talking to people in a room, whether, once again, you're selling internally to your CTO, like if I'm at a company and I'm selling to you the things we should be doing.
Yeah.
If I'm talking to a customer, you know, if a vendor's talking to us, talking to a customer about why we should partner, right? So, like, what do you guys think in terms of, like, how do you build that story? How do you construct those things so that they can be intelligent as well as consumable? You know, like, I'll actually, let's start with our CTO, because, I mean, you literally set our company's kind of story, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, we spend a lot of time crafting, messaging, our go-to-market stories and, you know, how we sort of organize our capabilities and our partnerships. And I think you touched on a number of things. So, you know, as you're reading through something or watching something, you really want to hone in on the things that, you know, people really care about,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
And I think part of the challenge we have is that we work in a very complicated space, right?
Yes.
And in fact, I would argue that the space we work in today is orders of magnitude more complicated today than it was even 2, 3, 5, 10 years ago, certainly. So I think, you know, sort of sifting through a lot of the noise and finding the things that people really care about is certainly important. And, you know, you have to sort of distill things down and make it simple and consumable for them. I think that's important.
I mean, from my lens, I think you nailed it, right? And there's this, like, human condition, right? There's, like, primal things that people have inherently built into them. And the campfire, like, what we're doing right now is kind of, like, a metaphor for that, right? We're standing around this little table. We've got these you know, some drinks in front of us. We're having a conversation, right? But throughout the history of mankind, like, the best storytellers always ended up being, like, leaders in whatever group or tribe or
it's whatever motivated. It was.
Right. Right, and then there's, like, kind of like this oral history that existed for a very long time that transitioned into, like, kind of where we are now. And the better you are at telling those stories and in a relatable, simple way, the more humans kind of gravitate towards the campfire, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. It's relatable, right? Because we talked about the different masks, we talked about different personalities. It's about relating to people on the other side of a desk or screen or whatever it is and understanding how they need to hear something so that it sinks in, right? So, I mean, Kyle, you know, like, what, I mean, are there any kind of techniques or way that you build decks or anything like that, that, like, to kind of, like, portray that?
Yeah, I think from my perspective and our team's perspective, speaking from an essay standpoint, mm-hmm. I think we boil it down into the why, the who, and the how, right? Like, why are we, you and me, Mr. Customer, having this conversation, right?
Problem statement.
Yeah. What's the benefit, right, to this? And then who am I, what solutions, products am I going to look at or implement to help me solve this problem? And how am I going to do that, right?
Yep.
So I think we do a very good job at CDI and our team in distilling that information down for our customers on various different technologies and topics and trends and things of that nature. We have our making sense of presentations, yep. right, which is a framework that we've used for, geez, it's got to be 6 or 7 years now to help our customers, again, distill down the information so they don't have to go out and meet with 6, 7, 8 different vendors on a particular technology or trend. And we kind of, do that research for them, right? Yep, and kind of narrow the scope down for them, if you will, and then let them make a determination, right? It's not us forcing a product or a technology on them, but we're telling the story as to who we feel are the relevant players in this space, in this market, and how that will, you know, help them in terms of their problems.
Ironically, the... or did I say ironically?
Yes, you did.
Yes,
you did. I wish I had that bra button.
I don't know how fast you I ran, but...
Yeah. Ironically, the whole concept of those making sense of decks, right, that we've built a framework around, and we now have many, many examples of, is that it came from the three-act play that Shakespeare put together, right? Like, so we use that storytelling vehicle to create a scalable framework that we can now plug things into, which then led to all the work we've done with Will on the kind of pyramid of intellectual property that we have. And I don't know, if Will, if you want to talk about more about, like, how that works, right, from the top down, the GTM on now.
Well, so would you call yourself a modern-day Shakespeare?
I mean, absolutely not. Let's hear from Will.
Yeah, so
I'm not even going. I'm done. I'm out, bro.
So Rob is referring to the pyramid of sort of how we tell the CDI story of our capabilities, right? So we have sort of like at the top of the pyramid is what we call like our level 100 corporate level messaging. So who is CDI? You know, what are our broad level capabilities? What are the types of outcomes that we help customers realize? And then as you get deeper into the pyramid, right, you become more detailed. So at the top of the pyramid, it's like level 100, who is the company? We outline the different pillars of what we call our CDI framework of our go-to-market story.
What are those pillars, Will?
So hybrid cloud infrastructure, security,
the foundation,
modern applications, intelligent operations, digital workflow, and digital workspace the six pillars of the CDI framework, right? And then sort of as you go down the pyramid, you get into what we call level 200 of the pyramid or of the triangle or whatever it is. We've settled on pyramid.
It's a pyramid
at the end of the day.
It's a shape.
And in level 200, we sort of, we go into the 200 level of each one of those six areas, right? Where we talk about specific capabilities. We might talk about specific partnerships or specific services that we have.
Sure.
And those types of things. And then when you get down to level 300, we get to the making sense of framework, which Kyle talked about, which is really like, we're talking about a very specific problem or a very specific capability. And now a customer needs to know who are all the players in that space. Right, if you look at SD-WAN or if you look at SASE, or if you look at hyperconverged infrastructure or infrastructure as code, like who are the players and which ones make sense for me in my industry, in my situation, in my size vertical based on my existing skill sets, right, that I have. There's a lot of different factors that go into how we sort of arrive at an answer.
Soft costs, all that stuff. Right?
All of that, right? And sometimes we get to a different answer based on their situation, right? Yep. And that's okay. But the whole framework and the pyramid is designed to help a customer arrive at a solution to a particular problem that they have.
So, I mean, obviously that's a great CDI commercial, in terms of the things that we kind of try to approach things in a much different way, right? And, at the same time, for other SAs, whether you're at a vendor or a customer, it's very tough, right? It's tough when you're I always say, like, if you're a hammer salesman, all you have to sell is a hammer, right? And, what I would say is kind of to unpack what you said and what Rob said in terms of those different things is kind of really trying to look at the landscape, kind of transparently for all the people watching is, Rob mentioned something in terms of the storytelling and historical, knowledge of things, right? And what I would say is that it's tough to be agnostic, right? Because there's nothing,
everyone has bias and opinion.
Well, that's it. Vendors are obviously biased towards their product. Certain partners obviously are as well. We all have our favorites within certain form factors, right? But it's also, nothing is binary in terms of like yes or no's, right? It's a spectrum of pros and cons. Yeah. And, whether it's us helping you with that kind of spectrum of identifying what's right or whether it's literally creating that stuff for yourself, whether it's whether you're an internal architect trying to portray something in terms of a technology shift to your higher ups, it's telling that story, gathering those pros and cons, hopefully leveraging a partner like ourselves, right? To kind of be that cheat code to get you that information. But it's being knowledgeable in that area and understanding your problem statements, like you said, portraying those things in a articulate way, and then leveraging the different products in the space to say how they do or don't address those problems.
Yeah, I think if you put yourself in a customer, it's a unique spot that we're in today in the technology land, right? If I'm a customer, right, and I'm engaging a CDI, right, and I'm looking at basic example of an all-flash storage array, like unless I have a very specific performance profile and requirement, I know I can go out and pick whatever the hell I want, and I know it's going to work.
It's going to work.
Right? Yeah. So, like...
You don't need a PhD.
Exactly.
That wasn't always true.
That was not always true. And that's, again, going back to whatever, episode 1, 2, whatever the hell it was, we were EMC Cisco VMware, right? We were very good at EMC. Yeah. And EMC, fortunately, was a great technology, and we were very good at differentiating that. But now it's like, okay, I know I'm going to get the IOPS and the throughput I need.
Yes.
What above and beyond that, and, you know, is this technology going to bring to me, right? I have all these other tools and workflows and, CI/CD pipelines, whatever the hell it is. How is that going to tie into that, right? So it's all above and beyond the IOPS and throughput nowadays. And that's where we come in to help use real-world examples in terms of how we integrated this for other customers. And that's the story that we're bringing to customers. It's like a totally different conversation than it was 8 years ago.
There can be platform dynamics here, too. There can be even things like cultural dynamics. Like, does the cultural fit of the product set or platform set that you're looking at, you know, developing on or being part of an infrastructure play work with the culture and kind of outcome that you're trying to get to at your company from a business?
So I'll give a perfect example of kind of just to storytell of something that's going on with me right now. You know, I have a particular customer where in terms of internal politics, you know, the customer has a bad taste in their mouth for the particular solution they have right now. And I won't even say what product or solution it is.
Illegal.
Exactly. Legal. You know, you never know. But we've kind of determined with them that literally it is the cost of change is easier to completely change the product solution than it is to actually just redo what they're currently doing. You know, because the people process procedure, you know, part of it is actually harder than the technology. So if you change the technology, they have to change everything else. But if they keep that same technology, they're not changing anything.
I think I know what technology you're talking about. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I mean, there's this, like, we could do a whole other show on the kind of, like, the garage full of tools
conversation,
right? Where we've seen this, especially the bigger the enterprise get, I think the worse this problem statement becomes. It's like you have divisional people making decisions to solve point solutions that where you end up with, and the analogy is everybody has a garage. No matter how big your garage is, you will fill it with stuff that you don't really need, right?
Sure.
But you can't throw any of it away because one day you might need it, right?
Yeah.
And or your family members may say, well, that's very important to me over there. And you're like, you only use that thing once a year. Why, you know, why is that? some of the things we've done around this whole concept and idea is consolidation. That's happening across the entire industry, right? People want less things that do more. And it's not about the best thing for every single point
solution.
People
choose platforms over point solutions at this point, regardless of whether or not that point solution is better than the platform.
That's
in terms of that one little thing that it does.
Good enough to solve the generalized problem set, platform makes more sense than
that. I mean, I'm sure we'll get into it in another episode, but think of security tools.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, like how many agents and things are installed on a single like desktop to plug a few duct tape holes. It's like the seal guy.
Yep.
You know, like you plug a hole and people
flex
don't
seal.
Flex seal. Boom.
Boom.
You know, you find a hole, you plug it.
R.I.P.
Exactly.
That's right.
Right. So but that's the thing is like, you know, you think about that, you're perfectly right. And people don't think about a platform sometimes.
Yeah.
They think about just a point solution. And they don't think about, well, the three other things we have on this image, we just need to buy another license, and that same agent would do those things.
I feel like Will wants to say something.
Well, tying it back to storytelling,
yeah.
This is where CDI's story is actually very good, right? Because there's a lot of vendors out there or partners out there in this ecosystem that as the space fragments more and more, and as new startups come and go, and there's M&A happening, and all that, listen, at the end of the day, there's more choice today in enterprise IT than there ever has been, ever.
In the
history of technology.
It's been exponential, too, in the last, like, you said it before.
It's crazy.
Like 5 years.
Well, I mean, so let's take a step back, right?
Always.
You personally, you know, being the CTO, you've also been responsible for a lot of that go-to-market, right? You're responsible for 100 and 200.
Yeah.
You know, but now because of the saturation in the market of all those different products, we now rolled out the office of the CTO.
Yep.
And, you know, now you can have just like, you know, we talked about our SA team in terms of specialists that were able to hit that scale. Now you have that, you know, you have the people that can focus on particular solutions within a tower to own the verbose, overly verbose amount of products that fall within those towers.
Yeah, well, we had to, right? Yeah. It's the defragmentation, right? And you know, the SA team is our scaling mechanism, right? Yeah. So we work very closely with the SA team to develop that strategy and that go-to-market messaging and to be able to carry that out externally to customers and our other partners. It's super important. So
you know what's crazy about this? Like, if you really think about it, though, at the scale of the size of the organization we have today, is that we still have consistent storytelling, right? And I think that's something that really separates us.
We do.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But that's the thing, is that I think
like, if you think about what the conversation we just had, right? Will's talking about the partnership, the scale, right? We've talked about this in past shows, right? Where that's leadership, right? Mm-hmm. And I believe strongly, and I think we all do, is that our function in life is to be leaders and influence our customers to make the right decisions to get to the business outcome that they want, right? They don't know all the answers, right? We see a lot more things than they do in the general, you know, scope, like in a reasonable amount of time. We're going to see a lot more things that go well, things that don't go well, right? So us being able to bring those stories, which is what that is, right? Hey, if you do this, we've seen this go very badly. Or, hey, we've seen people make this decision. Sometimes that's not an easy one to make, and they've had a really good outcome because of it. That's value, right? And that differentiates us, I think.
So I want to pause there once again and kind of say, from there, you know, once again, it's great that we differentiate at CDI for those things. But at the same time, you know, if we break that down for people, you know, it's with storytelling, you know, use your peers. It's create some sort of templatized story on how you deliver things so there's consistency. Yeah. You both said consistency, right? And understand what the people you're trying to deliver to need. You know, so if we loop in last episode along with the things we said today, you know, I think everybody can kind of take that home and understand that that's simple. How they can deliver a simple message.
Yeah. It's got to be simple, right? Like, you got to go back to the thing I said earlier about the buyer, the human condition, right? Mm-hmm. The more complex your story is, the less people are going to understand it and be able to reiterate that story. The simpler it is, and the more of that primalness you tap into, you know, the more success you will have in everything.
So let's kind of loop this back around. And I said we're going to talk about failures as well, right? I think it's very important to understand as part of success, it's also owning your failures. We talked about extreme ownership. You know, Jocko's book and several other books that are like it talk about you have to own every aspect, not just the success, not just giving success to yourself, allowing success to happen to you, your other people, giving credit where you need to, but also owning your failures and understanding you spin wheels if you play that finger pointing competition, right? Yeah. It's about owning something moving forward, right? So how do you think, Rob, how can I, like, I make a major mistake of some kind, whatever it is, I can give one of my major ones that nobody was happy the way I handled it because I was an engineer. I wasn't an SA, I feel like, right? You miss things on a design. You miss things. You miss encryption, licensing on an array, whatever it is, right? Like, how do you think that you own that and move forward?
Well, I mean, the first thing is everyone's going to do that, right?
Yes.
It doesn't matter if you're the best, you know, most intelligent.
You're human.
You know, if you're in demand and people want you to do things, you're going to make mistakes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just a thing that happens. And really what people want to know is what's the answer to solve that problem. And they don't want somebody saying, well, that's his fault.
Yes.
That's your fault.
Yes.
It's not my fault.
Not my job.
Yeah. Not my job. Not
it's
my
the
problem.
Fastest resolution.
No. So the best leaders, even if it's not them making a mistake, it's one of their people, they take ownership of that and say, okay, we made this mistake. We own it. We are now going to move forward. But it that's also not a one-way street. So mm-hmm. you know you've got a really bad partnership with whoever you're talking to in a problem statement when they go, well, it's all on you and I'm not willing to do anything to help you.
Yeah, sure, right? Sure.
So
yeah.
convincing that other person or kind of influencing the situation back to a mutually beneficial end state is mm-hmm. really what I would tell people to try and do, right? Like don't live or what's this, the phrase we use here? So yeah, don't live or die alone, right? Like don't sure. win or lose.
Alone. Never lose alone.
Never lose alone.
Never lose alone. Never win alone. Right.
Yeah, that's
always
right. That's what it comes down to.
And that's what it comes down.
I mean, so
never win or lose.
So alone. Kyle, I mean, same
nah,
question
I
to
think
you.
He hit on all the key details, right? Like we've all, myself included, have made some disastrous mistakes.
Well, so I mean, do you want to list out all of your?
No, I definitely don't. But
I mean, so let's go into some of your largest mistakes.
Right.
I mean, if you want to list customers, I mean, I think everybody. No.
I don't think legal will appreciate
that. I think in our context, in our company, right, the way we work with customers. I think some of our best relationships with clients that we have today and partners
yeah,
too.
That's a great
are
point.
Actually born out of
know where you're going
big failures,
yeah,
big mistakes, right?
And
it's not what happened or why it happened.
It's what you did.
It's actually
to correct it.
how you respond mm-hmm. to a failure. Like when you're in a really bad CSAT situation and you're up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yes,
pink eye.
It's an all hands pink guy.
Pink eye.
Go back to episode one for the pink eye story.
Pink eye. You drop a server on the floor. It happens.
Whichever.
Like you, whether you're in the data center, you're on a war room call on a you know Teams meeting or a WebEx or something, and everybody, it's like that is where you can really show a lot of value to a customer, and it's how you respond to the like you all hands on deck, whatever it takes, doesn't
respond
matter whose fault it was.
React.
That's right. You respond to the failure, you fix the problem, and everybody wins in the end. Like that's a huge component of failure.
I mean, honestly, that right there, I think, is an important life lesson in general. You know, most people in life, whether it's your kids as a parent, you learn more from failures than you do successes a lot of times, right?
If you're not failing, you're not actually trying.
You're not learning. You're not learning.
You're not doing anything, though.
Well, I think the industry, too, has sort of embraced, like, think of, like, agile-based development or methodologies.
Fail fast
is, like, a huge component of that.
Yeah.
It's like the industry has sort of embraced this concept of, like, I would rather try 10 things and fail 9 times than not try anything.
The flip side of that, though, we're seeing people bring products to market that are like 10% ready and it's garbage day one.
There's a balance, right? Just like with anything.
Obviously
but even that is like that, you're putting, like in that example, you're putting a product in the hands of the people that are going to use it. You're going to get better feedback. You're shortening the feedback loops. And your product gets better
but
faster.
But imagine being a sales guy saying, hey, yeah, I'm going to give you a dog shit product. And it's going to suck, but you're going to tell me how to make it better. And then we'll make it better for you. I'm sure they'll appreciate that.
But you're right, though.
You're right. At the end of the day, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, I think no matter what your opinion is of social atmospheres, obviously everybody's very loose-lipped these days with opinions, right? But at the same time, when you're talking about products, you're talking about go-to-markets, when you're talking about those types of things, opinions matter because that's how you tweak those things. And like once again, going back to leadership even, you know, it's understanding and having that open communication, just like we're having here with the round table here, the fireside chat, right, is understanding that you only get better from communication, understanding, and moving forward from those different things in a constructive manner, right?
Yeah, I think I would always rather work, like in the leadership context, I would always rather work for someone who is not afraid to make a decision, even if it's the wrong decision, right? Mm. Like, make a decision, try something, and if it's wrong, admit it. Yeah. Like, hey, I was wrong. Now we're going to change. We're going to do something else. And maybe that's wrong, maybe that's right, right? But like, at least you did something and you sort of moved the conversation along. I would much rather work in that scenario than, you know, just be afraid to make decisions or afraid to try new things or
you know,
things
you don't
like
make
that.
Mistakes. You're just that good. I don't understand.
Stop it.
Are we gonna talk about this
this
0 of 10 beer you bought this week?
Man.
Tough crowd.
Seriously. Well, Mr. Michelob Ultra.
Dog's vomit.
It may not look good, but it tastes delicious. I don't care what anybody says. So this is Relationship Status by Magnify Brewery. It is a delicious sour IPA. I don't care what anybody says. Everybody else will bring beers next time. The host will not bring beers. He will bring some sort of like apple juice, like in a can.
This beer
He'll
is so bad, I may never come
really
back,
good
to be honest.
If our lovely CTO comes back, he has good taste. I trust him.
I don't know. I love Magnify, but I can't do that beer.
Okay, that's fine. Good. That's fine. It's true. They've gotten a little cocky lately. But
and you were supposed to bring us Thanksgiving leftovers. What happened?
There weren't any leftovers.
Oh.
Well, luckily I didn't burn down the house with the
So it's Jingo jeans you got on.
So before we end here, I just want to circle back with one more thing. Will, last episode we were really going over leadership and things like that, as kind of the leader of direction, how do you find, especially with the office of the CTO, I imagine that's a little bit tough, right? Because you have very senior people with very strong opinions. How do you help guide them and enrich them in terms of their, day to day?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a lead by example type of person.
Sure.
I've always worked for people in that situation. And I think, I've always respected that. So I always try and sort of carry those principles out through my leadership style. Mm-hmm. And I try to do as I would expect them to do.
Sure.
Right. And to coach them. We've all sort of, the interesting thing about my team is that, it's different in the sense that a lot of these people, they're like very, very senior people. So they don't need as much, day-to-day
day-to-day
coaching
management.
Or hand-holding. Yeah. We all sort of came up through, various different, a lot of us were pre-sales architects, right? We were always very customer-facing. We're all in front of customers all the time, whether it was pre-sales. And even before that, we all came from an engineering background, most of us, right? We were field engineers, in data centers getting pink eye.
Yeah. Classic example.
I mean, everybody has to check that off their list before they can become an SA on my team. So.
Right. So I think for me, my leadership for me is a little different because a lot of the people that I lead or manage are, they're self-starters.
You're also dealing with highly opinionated people that you have to steer. So
sure.
Yeah, which is
tough.
And keep in line with the overall kind of, we talked about it, the pyramid, the overall.
And the storytelling.
Keeping people between the beacons, we like to call it, right?
Yeah, because, like we talked about.
That's ironic.
Ironic. I mean, it's not a political show, but, at the same time, Iran, whatever. But at the same time, you do a good job with that aspect of everything. And definitely.
It's worse than the beer.
Sorry, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Thank you, Will, for joining us
Let's
today.
Wrap this up.
What I will say is we're going to wrap up for today. We usually kind of tease the next subject that we're going to go over or topics that we're going to go over. I'd really like to kind of pose it back to those of you watching.
Yes.
Hopefully, a couple of topics are submitted.
Crowdsourced.
Where do we submit them to?
You're part of our incubator. Well, I think in the show notes we'll probably have where you send that stuff to. We'll establish that. But definitely thank you for everybody for joining us once again for Essays and IPAs. And we hope you enjoyed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Salud.
0 of 10 again.
Essays and IPAs is a production of CDI Studios, hosted by Michael Colonno, Rob Owen, and Kyle Mullen, and is produced by Alyssa Hall and Spencer Grogan. To learn more about CDI, you can visit cdillc.com.